few minutes to.
Okay, that's Rebecca. Meeting is being recorded. We all have to hit.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So I would like to, we're recording, okay. I would like to call the February 3rd, 2022 environment and sustainability, or rather energy environment and sustainability committee meeting to order. And this is a virtual meeting. And would the clerk kindly call the roll?
Yes, ma'am. Chairman Manager Green.
Present.
Deputy Chair Gina Hansett.
Present.
Phil Erner.
Present.
Joseph Maloney.
Here.
And Eric Stewart. Not yet. One moment. I see a caller at 585-943-7454. May I get your name?
Jen Benson with Riverkeeper. I live on Hasbrook Avenue.
Okay.
In Kingston.
Thank you, Jen. All right.
All right. So, in a sense, the rest of the people on the call got to briefly meet the legislators during roll call, but I'm just going to go across the squares, and starting with our very kind clerk, Fawn Tantillo. And he just say a word or two.
I'm the clerk that's been emailing you, and I'm happy if you need anything, drop me a line.
Great. Okay, mm-hmm. Folks, sorry about that.
Yay. And just
is
to
it
know,
Eric?
Oh, that's Eric down there. Okay.
Yes.
Just to note that Eric Stewart has joined us and is present and visible. Charlie Landy, and followed by Mark Ryder. Just say who you are and, you know, kind of create a context, particularly for our new legislators.
Banner, Charlie Landy, the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency Board Treasurer. Anything I can answer, any questions I can answer about the RRA, I would.
Great, thank you.
Hey, everybody. Mark Ryder, Deputy County Executive. I'm in this meeting because one of the departments in my portfolio is the Environment, Department of the Environment. I'm also overseeing the Green New Deal as one of the initiatives that has come into my portfolio as of late when Evelyn Wright left. So, working with you all on a new committee. Many of you know me, but it's good to see you all.
Right. Up until this meeting, this committee was the Energy and Environment Committee. And it's now Energy, Environment, and Sustainability. And I'm thrilled. But it's also a mouthful. So we're calling it EES. Gina, do you want to say a word followed by Joe?
Sure. I'm Gina Hansett. I'm a newly elected legislator from District 10, which makes up part of the town of Lloyd in the northern part of Marlborough. And I just finished with my law enforcement and public safety committee meeting and hopped on here now. And I look forward to working with all of you and meeting you.
And you're doing double duty. Thank you. Joe followed by Nick.
Joe Maloney, District 2, Saugerties.
Nick?
Hi, everybody. I'm Nick Vazda. I'm the interim director for the Department of the Environment and previous deputy director.
Great. And then Phil followed by Emily.
District 6, City of Kingston, Wards 3, 5, and 9.
Emily,
Emily Halter, I'm a resident of the City of Kingston, and I'm here as Vice Chair of the Ulster County Environmental Management Council.
Great. And the reason I say followed by is so you can know to take yourself off mute, and then when you're done talking, put yourself back on mute. So Charlie Whitaker, followed by Legislator Petit. Charlie is the operations manager for the Ulster County UCRRA. Laura?
Hi, I'm Laura Petit. I represent District 80 SOPIS.
And let's see, Kathy, followed by Rebecca Martin, I guess. Kathy, please.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Oh, it is so good to see everyone. Hey, this is great. I am the chairperson of the board for the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, and that's what I do.
Great.
Who's next?
Let's see. Rebecca Martin, followed by Legislator Stewart.
Hi, Rebecca Martin here tonight, Director of Community Partnerships from Riverkeeper.
Eric?
And I'm Eric Stewart. I represent District 18, which is portions of the town of Hurley and portions of the town of Marbletown. Previously, I served on the town board in Marbletown for the last 4 years, and I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of you already, so it's nice seeing everyone, and I look forward to working with you all more.
Okay, Charlie Whitaker, do you want to take yourself off mute, or I did kind of introduce you. There you go.
Can you hear me?
Now we hear you. Yes.
Okay. What I would like to touch on, how you doing, everybody? Catherine, how are you? Charlie, and Emma. Hey, Joe, how you doing? I'd like to talk about what we've done
Charlie,
over the past
I'm gonna
year.
Stop you. If you guys we will know. Have a chance to have you speak because it's on the agenda. I was just doing introductions. We haven't even done the pledge to the flag yet.
Okay, I thought you introduced me before.
Okay, sorry for the confusion. And Jen Benson is also from Riverkeeper, and we'll have a chance to speak later on a specific topic. Have I missed anybody? Okay, so I want to go back, and I've called the meeting to order, and I'd like to ask, is there a volunteer to lead the Pledge of Allegiance? If not, I'm going to call on somebody. Okay. Thank you, Laura.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And the next item is to approve the minutes of the previous meeting, which was minutes and transcript, November 29, 2021. That was a case where Energy and Environment met the last week of the preceding month. So it's not really the November minutes. It's the December meeting minutes, but every once in a while, we'll meet on a fifth, in this case, Thursday, instead of the first Thursday, you know. Anyway, so You do not have had to attend that meeting. I think this is pretty much an all new committee. In order to approve the minutes, I think it's unusual for the chair to make a motion, but since I was the only person that was there, I would like to make a motion to approve the minutes. Do I hear a second? Need a committee
second.
Okay, that was Joe. Okay, all in favor, please signify by raising your hand and or saying aye. Either one works. If you're on mute, you can just raise your hand.
To be clear, Madam Chair, we need to see and hear people when they vote. So it's good that they raise their hand, but they need to also say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Does anybody object? All right, motion carries. The minutes are approved. And before we go into the UCRA update, and at that time, Charlie and anyone else from the agency is welcome to speak. I want to start by just reminding us, beginning of a new year, a new session, and a new name for the committee, as I mentioned, I want to just read our mission to help get us focused. And that is the mission of the Standing Committee on Energy, Environment, and Sustainability is to set up policy and review contracts pertaining to the Department of Environment, the Environmental Management Council, Fish and Wildlife Management Board, and Forest Practice Board, including the protection of waterways and the county's recycling efforts, to set policy and review contracts pertaining to but not limited to the activities of the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. So just so we're clear, and I would also, Fawn, I think it's been a while since we've heard from Forest Practice Board, and I wonder if we could specially reach out to them for March just to reconnect since they are supposed to report.
Madam Chair, I do not believe it's a New York State Forest Practice Board, and the research I've done recently, I do not believe that committee exists any longer.
Oh, well, we may want to modify this, especially before the directory goes to print.
Well, it would take a resolution, so they were thinking they would probably just correct it next year, but
okay, it's fine with me. Any committee member have a concern about that? All right. So with that, to go back to the agenda, the first report of the evening is from the UCRA. Is Tim here? If not, whoever is going to report for the UCRA, please proceed.
That would be me.
Manic.
Are we okay? Ready? Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Charlie.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Charlie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, everybody can hear me then? So what I want to talk about right now is I want to talk about last year we did close to 150,000 tons in our trash building. And I always talk to the people working in my buildings that we are a recovery place first, not a disposal place, but a recovery place. So our mission is to capture as much as we possibly can from the waste stream and prevent it from going to a landfill, saving on trailers, fuel, and also landfill space. I put together some numbers before I came here on just what we recovered from the trash. So 195 batteries, 3,800 deterrents, people without tarps, stuff blowing all over the place, 3,800 warrants, 93, almost 94 tons of clean wood, 676 tons of rubble, concrete. This is all out of my garbage belt, and this is what we captured. We got two spotters on the floor. So these are pretty staggering numbers considering the people we got working on the floor. We're always 86 tons of cardboard. This are containers that people put stuff in that they're going to throw away. Our guys and capture on the cardboard. So 86 tons. Just so you folks know, 53 tracked and trailer, 53-foot tracked and trailer, we send out 20 tons. So you're looking at almost five tracked and trailer loads of cardboard, okay? These are just boxes, dumping them out, capturing the cardboard, five tracked and trailers. 1,100 propane tanks, 3,900, almost 4,000 tires, 5,200 pounds of wire, 2,000 pounds of copper, 150 ballasts, 553 tons of metal. I'll say that again, 553 tons of metal. 108 tons of brush, clean wood, freons, 2,510 freon units, air conditioners, dehumidifiers, and 77 tons of e-waste. Now, the e-waste is not the collection point at the office every Saturday. This is out of our building, e-waste capture. So this is what the folks are doing inside these trash buildings, pulling out from the trash 150,000 tons of trash. The markets are still decent. They're not great like they were 3 months ago, but they're decent. The natural, your number two natural, your number two colored, they're about where they should be, normal. Your PET is about double of what it usually is. It's usually 11 to 15 cents a pound. So, and the metals are still doing okay. Not great, but okay. Currently, we're having trouble getting baling wire, just like everybody else is. 11-gauge baling wire for our baling. That's been I want to say these numbers, everything that I just told you is outside of what our MRF has baled and sold. So, just to give you an update on what we're doing inside the building. At our recycling center, 1,500 tons of commingle, 587 tons of glass, 1,155 tons of mixed news, 1,100 tons of Kingston City's hard mix, 2,600 tons of OCC, 878 tons of brush, that's for our compost. 33 to almost 3,400 tons of food waste, and 179 tons of e-waste collected at the office every Saturday. So, and we did 2,100 tons of wood chips from the towns. So that gives you an idea of what's going on at our MRF. What we're doing there with the folks there, I got about five people on the floor. When you look at this stuff, all this stuff being baled, sorted, inspected, that's all at our MRF. This is all inside of our trash building. So this is what we do. This is our focus. No matter how the markets are doing bad. If the numbers are negative, the agency always picks that up and does not pass that along to the towns. We have not, since I've been in charge, been passing any of these costs when they go into a negative to the towns, such as glass. Anybody got any questions?
Am I up?
Go ahead, Legislator Maloney.
I wasn't sure. What do you do with the batteries? I got a couple of questions that I've always wondered about, and I think it's good if we start asking more questions rather than be embarrassed we don't know something.
Sure. So batteries are recovered and sent to the scrapyard. John, I want to mention that number again. 195 batteries pulled out of the trash. Just imagine 150,000 tons and finding 195 batteries. I mean, that's incredible. So 195 batteries, they go to the scrapyard.
Do you find if there's things – electronics, brush, things that aren't supposed to be getting mixed in, if you're finding haulers mixing these things in, are people getting fined? Are there repercussions?
No. Nobody's getting fined. Punish people. This stuff is dental. So this is volumes of trash coming in at once and being recovered. A lot of times things are loaded. People say they don't know about it. They're just bringing it in. They're making some money. You know, I'm dumping it at our place. In the automated trucks with the trash cans, half the time, they're picking them up and dumping them in there. So this is coming out on the Packer. Packer does 1,000 houses in there. They're automated trucks. The point is that, you know, our place is to capture it as much as possible, and that's what we're doing.
Okay.
It would be easy just to let it go. And Joe, it was easy to let it go and blame it on the circumstances, but we do not do that.
All right. Charlie, with regards to the amount of solid waste that you have coming through that we're producing in the county, can you give me the last 3 to 5 years? Are we trending up? We level? Are we trending down?
No, waste
up each year.
Waste is going up. There's been a lot of problems with burn plants, Joe. A lot of problems with other transfer stations and stuff moving waste. There's a lot of jobs with people working. A lot of people don't want to work.
So we're taking
really hit hard.
So with other burn plants, that means we're taking in other counties' solid waste that they can't get rid of, or what does that mean?
You know, it's my guess. Trash has to move. So it's either going to end up on the roads or across the Rhinecliffe Bridge, or it's going to end up, you know, over at our place when they're leaving. I can't tell you for sure how much or if any. Do I think some out-of-county trash is coming in? I do think out-of-county trash is coming in. But do we know exactly how much in a packer? So if somebody picks up 100 houses on the way over the bridge and then comes and pick up another 900 houses, is it mixed in the load? Yeah, it is.
Let me ask you this. There's a lot of talk about I've heard talk about a burn facility here. There's a lot of talk about spotting a landfill. I don't think those conversations can even happen when we're producing 15, 20, 25, 30% more solid waste each year. I think we have to be trending down before we have responsible conversation about spotting a landfill in Ulster County, even if it's as great as
Joe,
Ken
Joe,
and Tracy.
Joe, Joe,
what Joe. Off? I'm asking you, if money was no object, is there equipment, retrofitting, some in-house things that we can do? What can we do to get off the trend line we're on, which we have to get off of? But with your expertise in the RA, what are some things you could do if money was no object? So there's no limitation to what you can say we can do. What can we do to get off this trend line so we can finally have that responsible conversation about what to do with the solid waste?
I'm going to let Charlie hold on, Charlie. I'm going to let you answer that, but Legislator Stewart has had his hand up for a while. So please answer Legislator Maloney's question, and then we'll recognize Legislator Stewart, because we have a long agenda.
Joe, as long as we live in a world where things are no good anymore, you can't look, you know, the 30% of e-waste can be refurbished. That's it. 70 it gets broken up into the metals and the plastic and goes to markets. You know, if you want to cut back on waste, rehab capitalism. But you can't rehab capitalism, because then you would have to have only so many people working in factories and producing only so much stuff. The retail business would only be allowed to sell so much stuff. And since we tax paychecks and we tax items that are being sold.
Charlie, there has to be a way. I mean, the tipping fee alone, I'm not here to debate you, but your answer cannot be we're just going to produce more and more solid waste. There are things we can do to deter it. There are things people can do. Compost, renewable, reusable. How do we people to do that?
Joe, we did 5,000 tons of food waste the year before that. What other county is doing that? We are the only county that's doing that, Joe. We are doing that. But we're not.
Well, if there's no answer, the only answer I see is the tipping fee. It has to be talked about, Charlie.
So the tipping fee, Joe, you know, if you raise the tipping fee, people are just – I know you don't want to hear this. People are just going to throw it on the side of the road.
I don't want to hear it.
Disposal has to be reasonable,
Joe. It's not a matter of not hearing it. It's a question of I'm not sure everybody on the call realizes that there is a group that's been working for like a year and a half, maybe 2 years, on waste diversion. It's the zero waste implementation. It's an ad hoc committee, and there's a representative from the agency, from the Department of Environment, from the legislature, and some volunteers. And so we are working on that. I think that's the forum, and we can create other forums. But to just get into a debate right now, as chair, I'm going to allow Eric Stewart to, Legislator Stewart, to ask a question. And I'm also going to request that Charlie Whitaker send the numbers to Fawn, so that if she wasn't, sometimes it was a little hard to hear, and we also have
okay.
to have the meetings transcribed.
Yeah, I can do that. But man, let me just add one comment, right? I just want to say this, right? Sometimes the old ways are the best ways, right? Education, outreach, right? Getting to our youth, right? Having people understand the value, you know what I mean, of not spending more on more junk. I mean, most of the time, the average thing is about 6 months and we throw it away. So, you know, Joe, we have to really start educating people and really get rid of this desire to spend. I mean, when you look at the cell phones, Joe, I mean, every time I buy a cell phone and it's like 6 months later, it's not supported. And you can't refurbish it. So how to fix those problems? So outreach and education is the best way to go. I think that's where we have to hack it. I think that's – it's again, everything's about maintaining.
I'd love to retort, but I don't think I'm going to be allowed to.
We have to keep
Let's give Legislator Stewart a chance, and then we'll let you say one more thing, and then we'll move on to the next topic on the agenda.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. Manna, you kind of read my mind in that I was going to request from Mr. Whitaker those the figures that he just read out earlier about all the tonnage of the various different categories of waste. That would be very helpful. So thank you for that. I also had another question. I was wondering how much of the increase of waste is directly related to COVID. I mean, I know that so many more people have been ordering things from Amazon. And Amazon is notorious for ridiculous amounts of packaging and stuff like that. And also there's been a lot of excess garbage being thrown away. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's been tons of masks that have been tossed out. And so I was curious if you had any idea about how much of that was directly COVID related, and therefore perhaps we might not see as much, hopefully, in the future.
You know, I don't know. I think that if I had to answer that question, I had to give you a reasonable number. I think it would fall between 10 and 15%. I think if I had to, that would be my best guess at that number, 10 to 15%. And again, I got to say to you, a lot of the cardboard boxes and stuff that come into our place we're capturing. There's a lot of stuff that there's no markets for, like the bubble wrap and the coated plastic paper and stuff. There's no market for that stuff. Everything is, I say it over and over, right? Everything is grade dependent, market demand, right? Supply and demand. That's what it's all about.
Now, it used to be that China bought a lot of our waste. I mean, how do you?
It's funny, right? So it's funny, like when we talk about China, there was a time where nobody wanted us to go to China. And when they found out we were sending stuff overseas, they were really, I see Emily's here, and Manna remembers too. People used to be livid about us sending any of our cardboard and stuff to China, and then all of a sudden when China shut the doors on everything, everybody started to panic. Right now I can tell you that in a good number for me to tell you. So about, I would say 50% of our cardboard is going to China or the Philippines. The rest is staying domestic. 100% of our plastic is staying domestic. You know, the glass is still being used as a beneficial use, so we're not trucking that out of state. What else? I think all my paper, 50% of my paper is staying domestic. So, you know, that's what's going on with the commodities. I know a lot of my metal is going to China. I'm sending it to the local scrapyards, of course, but a lot of it's going to China. When COVID first hit, all the scrapyards shut down. People were throwing cardboard out. Scrapyards were shut down. It's like we kept things moving. We kept baling and we kept sending to markets, as difficult as it was. We actually, this agency, and I want to thank the board for supporting everything that we've done. The two folks here at this meeting, Charlie Landy and Catherine, were instrumental in making decisions for this agency to keep moving materials and keep shipping recycling out. That's why we brought dump trailers and tractors and new loaders and stuff. We have in the back of our, Murph, just on our composting alone, we have two loaders, we have two screeners, and we have a stacker. You're looking at over $1 million worth of equipment. So the two folks sitting right here, you know, deserve a lot of credit for supporting this, everything that we're doing to keep things moving. There used to be a time we had to go to, we bought these dump trailers. We predicted a problem a year ahead of time. We purchased these dump trailers to move glass and to move metal. Charlie, you remember this, right? And all of a sudden it hit. And we had no place to take our metal and glass. We started using these dump trailers. We got them just before everything shut down. And we started moving our metal up to Albany to Sims. And I think they were loading that up and sending that out of the country. Actually, I know they were. And then we everything started to open back up a little bit. And we started to stay local with our metal. But I still do send 50% of my cardboard, newspaper to China. And I send 100% of my plastics domestic. So I want to say this, 90% of all plastics are staying domestic, just so you folks know. 100% of ours are, but just so you know, 90% of all plastics are staying domestic.
Okay, I want to remind, yes, Catherine, I see your hand, and take yourself off mute as I remind you.
Legislator Erner has his hand up too.
All right. I believe that, you know, most of the year last year, we were getting written reports ahead of time. I don't think we did for this meeting. At least I didn't see it. Vaughn, can you let us know? Usually they go to Vaughn and she forwards it with the package. So that would save the time. We would have the material and we would be able to ask questions. But I'll recognize Legislator Erner, and then I want to ask for essentially a board report or a report on what is currently going on at the agency. A lot of this is background information. It's a first meeting and it's understandable, but if you can give that some thought, I'll ask Legislator Erner to make his comment or question. Please take your... Okay.
Okay, thank you, Chair Green. Thank you, Mr. Whitaker, for your report. Thank you, members of the Resource Recovery Agency, for joining us tonight. As folks know, I'm new to the legislature. And I'm pretty new to following the RRA even. I've been working to arrange a tour there. But meanwhile, one concern that came out as I was running for office last year that RRA folks who were on the meeting that I attended the other day, and I had asked and did not get an answer, so I'd like to ask it again here. Please, for any of you, to give us an update about the situation with the comptroller and her request for records and where that's at from your perspective. Thank you.
Okay, I would be happy to do that. Right now, there's an appeal and everything legally is at a halt. We don't believe that she has the right to audit the agency because we are not really part of the county government, which is very hard for everyone to understand, but that just happens to be the way it is. We're an independent agency established by the state of New York legislature and so forth. So currently it's all on hold. The other things I wanted to address, well, we only got a couple minutes, is Charlie was good. We really have had more solid waste this year than ever before. And it could be because of COVID, who knows, but that's what's going on. But also about 15 years ago, I was on the board and then I was off for a long time. And that's when we conceived of this idea of trying to remove stuff from the floor so it didn't go to the landfill, so that we're recycling it or it's getting another home or another use or it's going somewhere, like the batteries. And they've done a phenomenal job of doing that over the years. More and more stuff is being removed, but it's a very dangerous place because you've got all these big trucks backing in, dumping it on the floor. You got the big excavator lifting it up, dumping it over the wall into the big truck that's going to take it to the landfill. So it's a really precarious situation, but it's a great job that they do, but they just got to be really careful. The other thing I wanted to mention, Tim DeGraff couldn't come tonight. We have an opening for a person who would be a recycling educator. Melinda France has been in that position, but she's been promoted to office manager. So we're looking for someone to be a recycling educator. And God knows we really need this person, along with Angelina Pione Brandt, to work on getting the word out, because, you know, the biggest problem is people don't know what can be recycled. People don't realize how much we generate and how much has to go to the landfill. So this recycling educator person, if you know of anybody who would be interested or qualified or someone who might know of someone, by all means, call up the agency, or I'm not sure, the job description may be on our website. I'm not sure. But that's a critical thing. Oh, good. Okay. So that's what really all I had to say tonight, was just to mention that. And, you know, come and visit. We love for you to see what we really do. And the other thing is, our MRF, everything that we recycle, our product is clean. We do not have contamination. And that's the biggest problem. When you mix all the recycling together, it never gets sorted out perfectly. So we actually can sell our products on the market, whereas a lot of other, I don't know who they are, but places where they do recycling, where they grind it all up into little pieces and try to separate it out, it doesn't get separated out clean. And that's a big problem. So even though we sort of are like an old-fashioned MRF, it works because we have people sorting it out. So that's all I have to say. Good to see everyone.
Catherine.
Yes.
Catherine, I would just like to add a few things also. First off, I want to say that when it comes to food waste, we just can't say bring it all, bring as much as you got, and have a complete disregard for what our permit says. We have the only permitted place that I know of, not registered but permitted for organics. We had a 2,500-ton limit. Last year we did 33. The DEC was aware of that. I wasn't going to turn it away. We were violated for going over, but that's fine because we have a modification. Everybody's still working from home, so everything's extremely slow. We have a modification for 2,500 tons more, 5,000 tons, to accept at our facility. So we are still waiting for the approval of that modification. All the engineering has been done for that modification. So I just want to let everybody know. So there are rules that we have to play by, and we have to apply for certain things to take more waste in when it comes to stuff like this. So I just wanted to make sure we pointed that out to everybody.
Legislator Stewart and then Legislator Petit.
This is just kind of a quick comment or a question. I understand that the main problem with recycling is getting things sorted properly. And I always wondered why perhaps we couldn't site a sorting facility at a prison and actually have prison guard and have the inmates sort recyclables. It seems like, you know, that way we wouldn't have to pay people to do that. So, but that was just kind of a quick random question I was going to pose. I mean, perhaps there's security reasons why that wouldn't work, but it seems to make sense to me.
Well, I also want to touch on something Kathy said about the single stream. So I always say this, right? You can't unscramble an egg. So you can't take a bunch of dry fiber. You know, your moisture is, you know, 25%. Anything above 25% with cardboard moisture, it's going to get rejected. So with everything dripping on it, glass breaking, all kinds of cardboard being damaged, you can't go back. I don't care what kind of facility you have. I don't care if you have a $35 million facility. You can't go and take a good product, make it bad, and make it good again. I don't care how many robots you got, how many optical eyes you got, how many blowers you got. You just can't do it. So now they have what they call dirty MRFs, right? So now, you know, it's not even about having one separate recycling can. Now there's no separate recycling can. There's places out there that got dirty MRFs, and you just mix it together, and they sort it at their facility, and they have a high concentrated, of course, of dirty material. But then these places also run waste energy plants, so that works out really well. So they can sell steam to make energy, you know. So I just wanted to point that out. My attention's on my phone for a second here. So now they have dirty MRFs, single stream MRFs. You know, destroy the product. We have laws. I just want to say, I saw an article that says that, you know, we need to change the laws, that we said that we have good laws. I want to be perfectly clear about that. We have really good laws, and it really touches on a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? As far as keeping the fibers all separate from each other, you know, I know Manna and Emily remember the days where we sorted everything, right? We sorted the tin from the plastics. We sorted the cans from the plastic. We sorted the newspaper. We sorted the cardboard, the different color glasses. Do you folks remember that? I mean, there was you had 8 different recycling containers on your porch. And then when we built our MRF, we said, hey, you can mix the plastic, the tin, the bottle cans, you know, and the glass, all different color glasses all together. So we streamlined that. And then, but you still had to keep the fiber separate. So I just want to make sure you folks know we have good laws on the books. It's just we have to go back to those laws and start seeing where we need to make them apply so we can get a better product out of what's being recyclable and better accountability on who's recycling.
Legislator Petit, and then I have a question, and then we really
Legislator Maloney has his hand up too. I'll defer to him. Thank you.
Well, I won't take long. It'll just be comments because we're not getting anywhere. I mean, we should almost do a subcommittee meeting, you know, term after term after term. We don't get off the solid waste production, you know, trend line that we're on. We never get to a real conversation about spotting a landfill. Charlie does a wonderful job. They work their asses off over there. They're the day-to-day operations over there. Nobody's working any harder. Nobody's doing anything more than they can do. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying we need to do more. And we need to get more of these questions answered. Now we're talking about contamination. We don't know how much is being contaminated. We're being told everything's great. There's nothing more we can do. I hear education. Education is just informing people of how to produce less solid waste. So we can do more. And education is not going to get us there. If we did a ton more education, put more money into education, we might move the bar a percentage point. But if we need to get where we need to go, part of it's going to have to be the tipping fee. At some point, we're not going to have anywhere else to take this stuff. So believe me, everyone's going to be paying more for their garbage in 5 or 10 years, an insane amount. And we're not going to have any solutions at that point. But we could actually get to where we need to be a lot quicker by beating everybody there. What's not being recycled that has a number on it? I'd like to know, and I'd like to know why. What plastics aren't being recycled? What can we do about that? Is there some in-house? Is there some equipment we can get? We got to start having real conversations and not what's happening here. This is what always happens year after year. What just happened here. None of us got all that much better. None of us, we don't have a plan for the coming weeks or months. We have to get down to it, really start answering these questions and start talking about all our different options, no matter how expensive. But I'm not going to sit here and go through this every single month. It's unproductive.
Joe, as I listen to you, it goes back to the same thing, packaging. You know, I mean, the biggest culprit here is packaging.
Point of order, the chair has the floor.
Thank you. This is not the forum for this conversation. I think it's an important conversation, but what I want to remind you is that there is a recycling oversight committee. There's a zero waste planning group. There are a lot of people paying attention to this. And I think that what I'm hearing is we need a forum to bring not just the legislators on this committee, but any legislator who's interested up to speed. But the intention is for the RRA to manage what they do as well as they are doing it. But there are a lot of materials that they can't manage. And so there is $75,000 for a feasibility study for a reuse innovation center where things like mattresses and other things that are difficult to manage, more C&D that it doesn't just get pulled out but actually gets recycled. And that's all in the works. So I think we need a remedial opportunity. And I'll see if we can set that up so that these questions can be discussed. But we can't take the whole night tonight. We haven't finished our reports or got to the resolutions. I have one last question for the RRA, and it has to do with the idea is through the zero waste implementation plan, we have a plan to divert as much waste as possible. And through the Reuse Innovation Center, we'll be able to, you know, physically divert a lot more waste than can be diverted. And that will, especially if you take out the food waste, which our law is doing, and you take out things like sheetrock, which produce hydrogen sulfide, the rotten egg smell of landfills. If all that is removed and there's a clear plan, including a timeline and finances and who's responsible, then the landfill itself will, be less onerous on any community. And then if you add to that a fair host community benefit package, but I heard Legislator Maloney say that we shouldn't be working on siting a landfill until we are working on and actively diverting as much waste as possible. I agree with the second part of that statement, but it's going to take a while to site a landfill. And once a landfill is sited, we get to keep the tipping fee. Some of that has to go to pay off the capital. It relieves us of the pollution burden and the cost of shipping our waste. And I checked with Charlie Landy. I said, is it really $8 million a year? He told me that last year it was $9 million. So, let's find a way to have this conversation, but I don't think we can pursue it any further tonight. Is there any update on the landfill siting process that you would like to share with us? And I'll direct that to
Nana.
Yes,
Nana, Charlie. Can you hear me? Okay,
yes.
Nana. Yes, HydroQuest. Well, I have to back up. Last October, we had a meeting. The RRA met with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and Kelly Totoro advised the agency to hire a consultant to see if there was any place in Ulster County's 1,100 square miles that could accommodate a landfill. And we did. We hired HydroQuest. And HydroQuest just recently came back with the report. And the report is not public at this time because we have to go back to Kelly Totoro, And for those of you who don't know who Kelly Totoro is, she's the executive director of New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Region 3. So whatever happens in the three counties that take up Region 3 has to cross her desk. So now we have to bring the consultant's report back to her and have her screen it according to Article 360 of the DEC rules and see if, in fact, the recommendation by the consultant firm meets the requirements of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. But I have two I would like to add and hopefully answer some of Joe Maloney and Eric Stewart's questions. As of tonight, there was a late entry to the agenda. And I don't know if you caught it, but some of you, I'm sure most of you caught it. But it was that the RRA wins composting awards. And the U.S. Composting Council recognizes the best of the best in the compost manufacturing and organics recycling industry. The RRA is the proud recipient of the 2021 Small Scale Computer of the Year Award. That was a late entry in your agenda. I'm sure, Amanda, you've seen that. Are you still here?
Thank you, and congratulations. Juan, was that your hand, or was it a thumbs up? Thumbs up.
I was applauding, Chairwoman. I just have one quick housekeeping thing. I didn't want to interrupt the conversation, but I see a caller from 917-533-3208. May I get your name?
Hi, Tanya Garment here.
Tanya, and what was your last name?
Garment, like clothing.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all. And with that, I would request a report from the Department of Environment. Nick, will you be giving that report an update?
Thank you. Yes, I will. I don't have any specific topics to discuss with the committee tonight, but I'm happy to give an overview of some of the projects that are on our work plan for this year. And I do have one announcement as well. I'll start with that. Our department is sponsoring an Arbor Day tree planting program. It's a municipally focused, focused on municipal events that have some sort of municipal sponsorship. We're partnering with the Ulster County Soil and Water Conservation District to provide trees to the municipal groups who want to do plantings. And we're looking for a demonstrated public benefit in the planting event. So there's an application that's been circulated. If you haven't seen it, I can share it with you. And the window for applications is open throughout the year, not just during Arbor Day period. So that's the first thing. A couple of the projects, we have four grant projects we're working on at the department now. One has been ongoing for 2 years now. It's a climate adaptation plan where we're evaluating assets and the county as a whole for climate change vulnerability and doing a risk assessment on those assets. A part of that project is to develop a municipal toolkit that will allow municipalities to complete the same exercise using some mapping tools that we're developing in arcgis.com. And we're working with a group of students from the Bard Center for Environmental Policy Master's Program to help with that project. And that's a Climate Smart Communities grant from the DEC. We also have a grant to do a natural resources inventory that's countywide from the Hudson River Estuary Program. And that's the procurement is happening currently, and we'll be contracting and starting that project within the next few months. We've received a grant from the Climate Smart Communities Program to do a community climate action plan. It's planned to be about a 12 to 15 month project. We're awaiting our revenue contract right now for the grant, and then we'll start procurement for that as well. That will have a large community stakeholder outreach portion that will be primarily led by a consultant that we hire, and certainly welcome input from this committee on the direction of that. And the fourth one is a small grant through the Climate Smart, the Clean Energy Communities Program from NYSERDA to do a weatherization project on two county buildings. This is an action grant we received in the program for completing a solarize campaign last year that met the standards of the Clean Energy Communities Program. We have three capital projects we're involved with. I'll give a quick update on those and then stop for questions. Currently starting design for a lighting retrofit of the social services building. The building currently has several thousand T8 and T12 fluorescent bulbs, and we'll be converting those to an LED system and updating the design to make sure that it meets the current codes. We're also closing procurement on a rooftop solar design for the UCAT bus garage that will supplement the electrification of transit that's happening there. And there's also we're in the planning stage for an expansion of the EV charging network around the county, not just the public charging network that we host now, but a greater footprint for fleet-focused chargers to support the growing green fleet. And the last one is planning stages for the Reuse Innovation Center feasibility study, which is also in the capital plan. I'll stop there and answer any questions.
Can you just connect that to the previous conversation? Just say a word or two.
For the Reuse Center?
Yeah, please.
So there is a $75,000 capital project that's planned in this year's capital plan to do a feasibility study for a Reuse Innovation Center. From the Department of the Environment, we've put forth a proposal about the timeline and the some of the components that would be required for us to manage that project as a capital project from the department, doing the procurement, stakeholder engagement, and then ultimately managing the contract with the consultant. That's one way it could go, but I'm happy to share more about that proposal.
And that dovetails with the work that the Zero Waste Implementation Planning Group has been working on. It's one of the three major components. I just really want to commend you and your department for immediately paying attention to that and not putting it on a back burner. And I want Legislator Maloney and others who have been asking about this to know that that is moving forward. And if we can stay on or close to the proposed timeline, that project could be actually implemented. We're doing a feasibility study this year, and it's a big question. So it makes sense to do a feasibility study to answer all the questions. And I'd like to help gather questions that you may have, but it could be implemented as soon as next year, which would mean that by the time a landfill is sited and constructed, we will be diverting the maximum waste that we can, and hopefully increasing every year what we're diverting, and therefore what goes to the landfill will be less and less. I just want to stress that because it's a long time coming, and really commend the department for not putting it on a back burner, but in fact bringing it to the front burner and taking action. Any questions for the Department of Energy for Nick? All right, very good. The next is the resolutions. And I want to mention one thing, maybe before we get into the resolutions, but there, I was sent a couple of environmental checklists that had been filled out for some bridges and relevant projects that are not on the list for resolutions for tonight. But the way the law was constructed, or the policy was developed, that those would come to the chair of this committee to review. And if I thought that they needed to be discussed by the committee, and then when it comes up in Public Works, it would have already been reviewed. So if I understand that correctly, did I say that correctly, Fawn?
Yes.
Okay. So my suggestion is going to be, and with Deputy Ryder here, I think these forms could also, let's see if he can just take a look at it. Nah, it's not going to work. These forms could also apply to the ARPA projects, and I'm going to make that suggestion to legislator Chris Well. It's just a way of looking, you know, and in some cases it might be not applicable, but in other cases, at least, you know, that's a way to sort of ensure that we're taking a look.
I just shared it. So you can
get it. Just happened to have that handy. Great. So I just wanted the committee to know that that's sort of one of our responsibilities, is to review the environmental considerations checklist. And I have a couple of projects that I think will then, if I understand it correctly, will be going to Public Works.
Can I just,
yes, please.
Just one thing on that. My only concern is, since this meeting oftentimes happens, well, every month, will happen after the Public Works Committee. If you, after you review these checklists, are you going to go to the committee? Because we're not going to be able to fill out the checklist many times a month prior to submitting a capital project to the legislature. So
it's not necessary. The way the law was written is just to send it to me, you know, the chair of this committee, for review. And then it will also be attached to the resolution that goes to Public Works. But it's not, you know, it's public information, and if committee members would like to see it, they're welcome to, but it's not going to be an agenda item unless there's something really striking, you know, that that we have to consider. But generally, that would not be the case. And I can even reach back to you if I see something, and you know, so that by the time our committee meets, I've already had a chance to touch base with you about it. All right. So the next thing on the agenda is to start the resolutions. And resolution number 10 is confirming appointment to the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency. It's a TBD, and I would like to revisit this after we go through the other resolutions, because we may need to go into executive session just to get clear. As long as we're just talking about the resolution, we can do that in open session, but if we're going to talk about specific ways to fill in the TBD, the blanks. We would have to go into executive session, and I don't want to hold all the other people on this call up. So I will revisit that, but the next one is resolution number 15, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 1 of 2022, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster, Chapter 131, Vehicles, County, Article 1, Sustainable Green Fleet Policy, in relation to strategies and goals, to be held on Tuesday, March 15th at 2022 at 7 p.m. So that's something that we often do is set a public hearing. It doesn't mean that we're making a recommendation on the details of this. It is to set a public hearing. Do I hear a motion for discussion?
Motion.
Motion. Second.
Okay. Thank you. That was Legislator Hansett followed by Legislator Maloney. Any questions or discussion on resolution number 15? Yes, Legislator Stewart.
I'm sorry, so this is just discussing whether we want to have a public forum, or are we actually going to talk about what's in the resolution?
Well, I won't limit the conversation because it may be relevant to whether or not we want to set a public hearing, but the resolution is specifically to set a public hearing.
Okay.
Legislator Erna.
Thank you, Chair Green. The materials concerning this seem to suggest we had planned to have a hearing on January 4th. I take it that didn't happen.
I don't really recall the answer to that. I'm sorry, but for this resolution, it is setting a public hearing on March 15th. And I apologize. I just don't remember the details. I don't know if anybody else on the call can answer that.
I think there was a resolution setting a public hearing last session. It's the last session of the legislature for January. So I thought that happened, and I thought the resolution that was going to be in front of the body this month was changing from 5% to 20%. And so I'm not sure.
Clerk Cantel, does that coincide with your recollection? She's looking, and while she's looking, Eric, did you have a comment?
I guess I was just curious as to why it was at 20% and not 25% or 30%. I was just wondering how we came up with that figure.
The two legislators that are proposing this are not on the call, and perhaps I should have talked it over with them ahead of time. Legislator Maloney?
Yeah, I think, Mark, you could tell, what are we at overall in the county right now? 11-12%, depending, or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the exact, Nick might have the exact numbers.
I'm not sure if I'm correct, but I was told that besides certain departments are at 80% green. I mean, is this it depends?
That was the most recent purchase. So I said in a committee meeting that our most recent capital, it's 80%. But that's not where we are overall.
No.
Nick, do you have the answer where we are overall?
We're at about 9% currently.
And I think it's a fair conversation to be had in caucus. I don't know enough about it, but from what Mr. Stewart was just saying, why not 25 or 30? I think Laura had said something like that as well to me. I really, so maybe the two, who is sponsoring this?
Legislator Walter and Legislator Criswell.
And it was in conjunction with you, Mark, like this is, are they, is this just theirs or is this in, is this, are they kind of carrying this for the exec? Is the exec happy with that number?
I think 20% was, I think last time I talked to Nick, you felt, Nick, 20% in the next 3 years was going to be fairly aggressive with DPW mm-hmm. and the sheriff's office, but you know, we would probably make other numbers work. It's just going to take a little bit more pushing, especially with some of the departments that don't have a lot of opportunity, like the sheriffs and DPW, who have the majority of our fleet.
Could it be split up by department?
Potentially.
One thing I would like to suggest, since this is about setting a public hearing and we're not actually voting on the law, that we could request that the sponsors be at our next meeting. But if people would like to proceed with setting a public hearing, I'm not sure how time sensitive this is. You know, otherwise we could hold it or officially table it. But I take responsibility for not calling them and getting really clear on what their rationale was. But I really feel like I can't speak for them.
I'll make a motion to postpone for a month.
Second.
All right. Any discussion on the motion? All right. All in favor of the motion to postpone resolution number 15, and I will request that one of the sponsors come and speak to it when we take it back up in March. All in favor, please signify by saying aye. And
aye.
Anybody opposed?
Chair, just a quick comment to it. I don't think anyone opposed. Perhaps if we're, I mean, it seems like this is something that may very well be what it ends up being. But if we're going to have legislators carry a resolution that is largely written by the executive and then have somebody from the committee carry it. And then, you know, it's kind of on us if we're not educated enough to answer the questions.
All right. Well, nobody said they were opposed to the motion to postpone carries. All right. The next is, this is a lot. So, resolution number 18, appointing an administrative an independent administrative hearing officer pursuant to paragraph 304-25 of the Code of the County of Ulster. And this is another instance of to be determined, but I think the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency has been asking for this, and there are other reasons to have an administrative hearing officer. So we can move forward, I believe, with a TBD and then have the chair of the legislature fill that in. Otherwise, we could also, And just so the committee is clear, we can hold it without formally postponing, or we can formally postpone. Any comment?
Yeah. And then I'll pass it over to Laura. Quickly, you know, we talked about this on another meeting, the difference between postponing. I'm under the impression, and correct me if I'm wrong, if we postpone, you get.
We haven't moved it.
We have not moved it. We're still discussing.
Okay.
Oh, well, let's move it for discussion right off the bat. Okay, I'll make a motion for discussion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. For clarity, if we postpone, you can postpone something three times. It can be postponed kind of against the will of the person carrying it, and then it has to be voted on. If we don't act, it doesn't start a clock. That's kind of the difference as I understand it. With this, I don't think it matters what we do. I think we'll be acting on this. This will be postponed, or I'll probably make a motion to, if Legislator Petit's okay with it. I think she got a call from the chair as well. And, I think there was, Deputy Executive Ryder had pointed some things out that legally we could write this differently. I wasn't told the specifics, but I was told that within a month we could have this right. This is the way it's been done in the past, what we put forward, but apparently there's some other compliance officers that we have in the county. And I think, Mr. Ryder, maybe you could explain that we wanted to formulate this resolution to have it look more like what we're doing in the county inside of a couple of other departments, even though it will still be an RRA, kind of acting on the RRA's behalf for violations and tickets regarding recycling. But Laura, I know you had your hand up, and then if Mark, if you want to explain anything, I'm willing to. I was just told about this a couple hours ago that there's another way to go about this, so I'm willing to go about it a different way. I think we can do it quickly. Obviously, I think if Mr. Whitaker has anything to say, too, I'd be interested to hear his thoughts.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. This resolution was passed back in 2008 or 9 when the source separation and recycling law was updated. And we had appointed Lewis Klein then as a hearing officer. I don't think there were any cases heard by him. You know, whether it's just they didn't have any violations or so, you know, essentially we have this already in law on the books, and we could just very well put in another person. I mean, I would like to hear the deputy executive's input on it, but I mean, this is already on the books as part of our county code. And we just need to find the right person. We've reached out to several attorneys. It takes somebody at least with a background in solid waste. And then the hearing officer would hear any complaints that went unresolved through the resource recovery agency compliance officer issuing summonses and complaints against individuals who are either violating the flow control law or our source separation and recycling law.
And I think that's because the fining is not done by the compliance officer. The charges are brought by the compliance officer, and then the administrative hearing officer, if they determine that the charges were valid, would set the fine or the penalty. Deputy Ryder, do you want to speak to this?
Sure. And my conversation with the chair was just around that we have several administrative hearing officer contracts throughout the county with attorneys, and you all can appoint anybody you want. But I was just giving her the mechanics on, so I think there was a question on budget lines and how this person, whether they were an employee, would become an employee of the county. And we have panels of hearing officers for personnel issues that hear Section 75, which is like grievance or disciplinary actions, our health department, the environmental section. So if we have violations of the sanitary code, which is similar to this, we have administrative hearing officers that are attorneys. So I was just giving her the mechanism of a contract, which may be different than exactly this resolution. So I do think it's pretty quick and probably be less than a month before you were able to figure it out.
I would like to hear, go ahead, Legislator Stewart, please.
I was just
kind of following up. Actually, we were sort of on the same track, I guess. I was just wondering, I mean, is this a paid position? Is this like additional duties that are added onto someone who's already working with the county? Is I just wasn't quite sure how that worked.
In our arrangements for the other panels, they're paid a set rate. I think it's typically like $150 an hour, which is what you see a lot of times with attorney contracts. And, you know, we only pay them if we need them. So right. they're typically not to exceed. They charge us by the quarter of the hour. And it's normally $150. And if the RRA needs them, then they're there. They're under contract.
Great. Thank you. I was just curious how the compensation works. So thanks.
And if possible, it would be great. I see your hand, Legislator Arnold. I'll call you in a second. It would be great if we could utilize somebody. I looked and saw that there were when Chairperson Beinkaffner pointed this out several times, I saw that there were hearing officers, and I thought, you know, maybe we could utilize. But I think the point is well taken. Ideally the person should understand something about solid waste. It's somewhat specialized. So, Legislator Erner, please.
Thank you, Chair Green. Again, as a newer person here, just someone could comment briefly on the idea of having a separate role here as opposed to using some other civil court that exists, or if anybody could speak to the origin of this and the general idea behind having this, please.
Let me take a first crack at that. I believe that the administrative hearing officer was specified in the recycling law that, you know, that's how it would be handled. And as Legislator Petit said, we did fill this appointment in the past, and then somehow there wasn't a lot of compliance originating either from the agency or anyone else, health department or anybody else, that felt that the law was being violated. So it kind of fell away. And then the RRA has been asking, because they do have an active compliance officer, but there has to be a place for that, any charges to be heard.
Chair, could we have Catherine explain to us kind of logistically how it would work? Maybe that would help some of the legislators to understand. The RRA is asking for this position. So give us a hypothetical of how it would actually function real quick.
Okay. The flow control law addresses solid waste and not the recycling. And theoretically, we have control of all the solid waste that is generated in our county. So suppose one of the haulers, we catch them hauling waste from our county across one of the bridges to say Dutchess County, then they're not in compliance with the law. And that's one of the instances. There's other instances too. I mean, I'm not an expert in this law. The recycling, I didn't realize even that this would apply to recycling. So I couldn't give you an example of that, but I can tell you in discussions recently, we're pretty upset that single stream recycling just doesn't work. And we're going to ask to change that as soon as we possibly can, because it just generates so much contamination. But anyway, when I was on the board like 15 years ago, we had this problem because we knew this was going on. And we just need this person. We have an enforcement person at the agency who could find these people who are doing the wrong things disobeying the law and could give them a ticket, but we don't have anybody to be the hearing officer to see that there is a fine or some other result carried out.
If I may, this is sponsored by Legislator Petit and Legislator Maloney, and it's very specific about the mandatory source separation and recycling law. Do either of you want to speak to this? And then we should
give a rundown on 30425, how it originated, and just give everybody a quick rundown on what we're trying to do. And then maybe, I don't know if we need to hear from Mark again, but basically what happened was there's another way to do this. It's pretty straightforward, this hearing officer for violations that the RRA would have their compliance officer put out. And then there's just a different, what we're discussing right now is Mark brought something up to the chair. The chair called me last second and said, there's another way to have this hearing officer. There's another way to structure it through the same way we do some other hearing officers in the county with a contract. And I said, okay, this was like an hour ago. I said, okay, I'll try to give everybody a quick explanation. And then just basically I was okay waiting a month. I had no idea. I thought Tracy was going to give Laura a call after she got on the phone with me, and she didn't. So I was caught by surprise that Laura wasn't aware I was ready to postpone a month. But Laura, give everybody a quick explanation. You explain this better than anybody.
It was something that was actually missing in the original source separation and recycling law. It was, we spoke about violations, but there wasn't a mechanism in there to actually ticket someone and have a court process. And as you mentioned in 304-25, it is clearly outlined. It's part of our county law now. And it has steps. I mean, as the there's a compliance officer with the RRA, even though there's not flow control on recycling, it is a mandatory recycling, and the agency's been tasked with enforcing that, so to speak. You know, even if it's prohibiting people from dumping on their transfer station floor, if it's a mixed. Mixed load. Everybody's getting really slow. Can you hear me okay? It looks like, Joe, you can hear me? Okay. So with that, we established this position of an administrative hearing officer. As far as I know, it was that person was never utilized. It was Lou Klein. It was brought up, I think, at our first meeting post-COVID in last August about the fact that the agency was looking for someone in that position, more specifically for violations of flow control. But, I'm not sure what the committee is looking at, but I think we should clearly have this as an appointed position, even if it is contractual. I don't know if holding it up another month is going to make a difference.
Difference because if I may, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Finish. It makes a difference because I really don't like passing TBDs. I prefer that we know what we're doing, that we've looked at resumes where it's appropriate and so forth. So would anyone like to make a motion to postpone so that we can work this out over the next month? It's been a while, and I think that the folks from the agency are glad to see that we're addressing it, but to rush it through when we still have a few rough edges to smooth over and work out, I think that makes the most.
Madam, may I say something, please?
Yes.
I just want to say that the mandatory recycle and source separation law does mention a administrative law judge. It does mention Lou Klein, but we have not received any resolutions, nor do we have any resolutions saying that he was the judge that we send violators to. It was mentioned in the law that it was discussed with Lou Klein, as far as Lou Klein being taken on that role, but Lou Klein was also taking on another role for the county at the time. In the law, that role with Lou Klein, he was not appointed for that for that role. We never had somebody to send violators to. Back in the landfill days when we hired Chuck Davis to go after violators and stuff, we were still seeking that position. Laura, back when you chaired in 2008, we have the minutes on that where we talked about having this law judge, and it was supposed to move forward at that point, and it has not. So I just want to be perfectly clear that we didn't have
– It did.
We have nothing, Laura, a resolution saying who was – it's mentioned in the law. You know, but it's not mentioned that he, you know, it was mentioned that he was talked to about maybe possibly doing it.
I think it wasn't mentioned who it was. I understand you're trying to make a clarification, but at this point,
it is because we never had a law judge that we could go to.
I think what Charlie's saying is that's the reason that they never, he heard it mentioned that there was never any violations or tickets. And I think Charlie's point is that under the RRAs, the way the RRA perceived it is they never actually had a judge. That's what I think the point of what Charlie's saying is.
Joe, it says that right in the law. I can share it with you.
No. I'm just trying to – I think everyone's trying to figure out what everyone else is saying. Well, I was just saying I think right. It sounds like you took offense to us that no, somebody's I'm, saying –
I just don't want people to say, hey, you know what, we gave them a law judge and they never exercised it. That's not true at all.
Okay, well, now we're trying to get one, and at the last minute, we were throwing a curveball. We thought we had a tight resolution right. That opened up, and all we had to do was then choose a lawyer. But now we're finding out there's two different ways to do this. So I'll make the motion to postpone, but I'm going to get right on this tomorrow with Laura. And the next meeting we have, we'll have something. I'll contact everybody before the meeting and make sure we're on the same page. But Charlie, we will be getting you this hearing officer.
Thank you.
I need a second.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator Stewart. All in favor, please signify.
Aye.
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 Okay. Anybody opposed? All right. The motion carries and resolution number.
Deputy Ryder has his hand up, Chairwoman.
Can I just speak on it one second? I mean, I think it doesn't really matter if this resolution just has a name added to it. That's fine. I think you just need to talk to an attorney. I think some of the questions that the chair asked me, and she called me, I didn't reach out, and this wasn't today. Some of the questions the chair asked and raised was that there's not a budget for this and some other things. So I think you may need to – there may be another resolution that's needed to add money in the budget for it that goes along with this, which is maybe why it makes sense to delay it a little bit. I don't know that the mechanism of this resolution really matters. You just put somebody's name in it and then do a contract later. You need the money for it.
No. So that would be a budget amendment. And so that'll come with it. And I'd like to move on. The next resolution is appointing and reappointing members to the Recycling Oversight Committee. This is resolution number 19. And there are various positions listed that were included when the Recycling Oversight Committee was created by law. And let's see, I believe that they are specified in resolution number 19 in the resolve. And that is that Town Supervisor Association would be Mike Baden. City of Kingston is Mayor Steve Noble. Energy and Environment Committee would be Joe Maloney. Ulster County Environmental Management Council would be Margot Becker. Commercial Waste Hauling would continue with Jonathan Kaplan from Royal Carding. Municipal Recycling Coordinator would be Aaron Enwin from the town of Rochester. And Commercial and Institutional Sector would be Mike Baums from the town of Furley. And the multifamily dwelling is TBD. The at-large member is Laura Petit, who's been chairing, and another at-large member is Donna Egan from Waco. So there's nice geographic diversity, and there's one more TBD. And I had said I don't like TBDs, but in this case, even if only the positions listed are filled, there will be a quorum, and the Recycling Oversight Committee has been reactivated. There was a period of time where they hadn't been meeting, but they're very active now and are contributing to the Zero Waste Implementation Plan. So I'd like to entertain a motion on resolution number 19.
Motion to discuss.
Motion to discuss. Yes, please. Do I hear a second for discussion? Okay. Who's second? I didn't see.
It's Eric.
Eric. Okay. And Gina, did you have your legislator hands up? Did you have your hand up to speak to it or just to second?
I was going to just second it.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Sorry.
That's okay.
Is there any discussion about this resolution? Yes, please, Legislator Petit.
Hi. Okay, and I'm sorry. I keep saying my internet's unstable. It's just to clarify, the Zero Waste Implementation Plan came out of the Recycling Oversight Committee, and we have been waiting to get some feedback from the work group. What happened is we were at the point where there were several materials that the work group was comfortable bringing forward, and those were presented to the Recycling Oversight Committee in two separate occasions. One was kind of a a meet and greet presentation, and then we met again last month. This is a real good group of folks, and we're hoping to fill in those other couple of positions. I would like to ask, just as a point of clarification, I believe Legislator Erner has interest, but our clerks said it's difficult if they meet two of the criteria. So if we already have someone appointed from this group, if he's still interested, would we under our law for establishing the Recycling Oversight Committee, could we put him in one of the at-large positions?
I'm sorry, the way the law is written, the three at-large positions cannot qualify under any of the other seats. And Mr. Erner would qualify as a member of the Energy and Environment Committee, so you could not have two members of the committee on that.
Okay, that's all I got. Legislator,
I know you would welcome him to attend.
Okay. Is the committee comfortable moving forward with the TBDs? And then I think as those positions are, if there are people that step forward and are being considered, we can fill those with a future resolution. Yes. Legislator Erner.
Thank you, Chair Green. And thank you, Legislator Petit, for the invitation and for the clarification that we can't do that, Ms. Tantillo. I think I'd be happy to play a spectating role in any case. Legislator Petit or anybody else who could just illuminate me again as a newcomer, I did read the law establishing these positions, and I'm just... and I went on the last meeting where I heard from a number of the folks who are being considered for reappointment. Mayor Noble, I didn't have too much to say in that meeting. I'm not familiar with Jonathan Kaplan or Donna Egan, if you could tell us a little about Donna and then also what this multifamily dwelling interest means. And that's where, yeah, please.
Do you want to answer? Or do you want me to take a crack? Go ahead. All right. I want to jump in because I helped write this law when I was at the RRA, if memory serves me. And the purpose was to be sure that there was a vehicle before things were added or taken off the mandatory recycling list, that all the sectors were represented. And that's what we, at that time, these were the sectors that seemed most important to have a voice and make their point and share their perspective. And so multifamily dwelling, solid waste management and recycling is very different than either the commercial sector or the residential sector or, you know, the haulers. So that was the intent, and that's why multifamily dwelling is listed. And it seems that whoever was either didn't want to get reappointed or is not being listed, whoever was on that position. And then we have one more at-large member. But you can see the various sectors. And, you know, even though there are other municipalities participating, and there's a municipal recycling coordinator. And you asked specifically about Erin Enowen, and there was one other position.
About Donna Egan? Donna Egan used to be run the recycling program in Sullivan County, I believe, and now she was just appointed. She was interviewed and Michael Bombs, they were both appointed, I believe, and interviewed in August, appointed in September. I don't believe they got to attend a meeting before their terms expired. So that's why they felt to put them back in. I certainly can send you their resumes. The Supervisors Association makes their recommendation. The mayor has his recommendation. It's difficult to get a commercial waste hauler. Laura can confirm that. Jonathan was very active. Erin, there's only a couple of recycling coordinators in the county right now. Many of the recycling programs, if I'm not mistaken, are run by highway superintendents. So Laura, when you were, I think there's only like three when you were there, and I'm not sure what the title, if there's still somebody in New Pulse with that title. The multifamily dwelling, if my understanding was to try to get somebody who ideally was doing maintenance in an apartment somewhere so they could talk about like the educational issues of getting multifamily dwellings to recycle. There's certain issues that they have just as commercial and institutional sectors would have that are different than household sectors. So Laura can correct me if I'm wrong there, but all of these people that are being reappointed have been fairly active on this committee.
Right, yes, yeah, they have. Commercial hauler, I mean, I think he's only missed one meeting, and that was recently, and he's willing to come back on. We have, Michael Baum and Donna Egan, who is our clerk, just said they were appointed, and then we hadn't had any real meetings until recently. They're also very good and very engaged. So if we could just get that multifamily dwelling person, which would be, you know, I'm assuming it could be somebody who's even in real estate who manages leases and apartments, or somebody with a large complex.
Could it be a a tenant who has that responsibility too, whether or not they're necessarily a super building?
I don't see why not if it's a multifamily dwelling, because it's a different kind of beast, right? You know, you're talking about working with multiple people. You need a different type of education and posting. And I mean, it could even be, you know, somebody from large hospitality like Woodland Pond. I know I've given some presentations there because there's always questions, or somebody from Birch's. I mean, if that's okay, that would open up the pool of potential members by quite a bit.
And did I hear that the mayor of Kingston appointed himself to this?
It's his, yeah. his seat to fill. He can appoint whoever he wants, but he's been very active himself.
He is. I mean, he's been in environmental education for 20 years, avid grant writer. I mean, the only other two options would be the mayor of Saugerties or Ellenville.
This is specifically a City of Kingston seat.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
There. It has to be from someone, a representative of the City of Kingston.
Because as it was originally written, it was confusing before, because there really wasn't an association of mayors. And I think that's how it ended up getting changed. Legislator Stewart has his hand up.
I move that we vote on the resolution.
He's essentially calling the question.
Thank you.
Knowing that the TBDs will be filled at a future time, I'd like to ask if people are in support of resolution number 19 as with the appointments as listed. All in favor? Is that a hand or your vote?
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Anybody opposed? Thank you.
Mr. Erner, you're opposed?
No.
Okay. No, I said that too quickly.
Okay.
So I saw everyone's hand go up, but I have to still ask, is anyone opposed? And hearing no opposition, resolution number 19 carries. And is that still a hand to speak, Legislator Stewart? No. Okay.
No, I'm sorry. I'm having to use this weird little microphone thing.
So okay.
That's why. My apologies.
It's working, so that's all we care. All right. Yeah,
I'm having all sorts of technical drama tonight, so sorry for that.
And my apologies to the people who have been waiting patiently. And last but not least, well, actually, we have a couple. But I'm delighted to offer resolution number 23, confirming the appointment of Nick Vazda as the director of the Department of Environment. Can I hear a motion?
Motion.
Thank you, Legislator Hansett. Second? Second, Legislator Erner?
Second. Oh.
Oh.
No, we'll give it to Phil.
Okay. I saw him go like that, but you're right. It does have to be said. Any discussion on resolution number 23? Okay. With that, I will ask everyone in favor to please indicate by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay. Motion carries. And one more. Actually, this is an old resolution. If I'm not mistaken, it was already passed, and it's just in the packet for information that is requiring the environmental checklist. Am I correct about that, Fawn?
Yes, those were just resolutions, draft resolutions you had under discussion, and we hadn't taken them off the agenda yet. So,
all right. typically we finish the resolutions before doing any new business or old business, but I'm going to ask that we do that because I think we might end up having to go into executive session on the RRA appointments. So I would like to recognize at her request Rebecca Martin for new business regarding the potential pilot for the Champlain Hudson Power Express.
Thanks, Manna. I'm joined tonight by Shannon Harris, who's also here. But I'll just start to frame the issue for the legislators here present. And I want to thank you, Manna, for having us and the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee for allowing me to participate this evening. My name's Rebecca Martin, and tonight I'm the director of the Community Partnership Program at Riverkeeper. Riverkeeper's mission is to protect and restore the Hudson River from source to sea and safeguards drinking water supplies through advocacy rooted in community partnerships, science, and the law. And I'm here tonight to raise an important issue for the legislature and that Riverkeeper has been following and that we would like to the Ulster County Legislature to be aware of. And that's a 30-year pilot request by Transmission Developers, Inc., TDI, a Blackstone company, and the Champlain Hudson Power Express, or CHIPPY. The TDI is the developer, and the project that is poised in part to use the Hudson River as a conduit to bring energy from Canada's Hydro-Quebec to New York City. The CHIPPY project is one of two projects that were selected. There were seven, six of which were New York State renewable energy producing projects, with the exception of CHIPPY, in September of 2021, to receive what is known as Tier 4 renewable energy credits. They're state subsidies. They're worth billions of dollars to be paid by utility customers across New York State. At the same time, TDI is seeking hundreds of millions of dollars more in local tax breaks in the form of 30-year pilots in 13 of 15 counties along the route where their transmission line would be buried, either underground or underwater. So in Ulster County, the route is entirely jet plowed underwater in the Hudson River. And where the river is being used, as I said, as a conduit to deliver power to New York City from Canada. The CHIPPY developer met with the Ulster County IDA last fall, and according to their application, their property taxes over 30 years would be $94 million. If the Ulster County IDA were to approve the pilot request by CHIPPY, their payment reduction would equal $29 million over the life of the pilot, or a savings of $65 million with no benefits for Ulster County. In Ulster County, the CHIPPY cable would run a total of 18.5 miles underwater in the Hudson using a jet plowing process, as I mentioned earlier. Ulster and Dutchess County officials have expressed concern about stirring up known and unknown contaminants from the riverbed during the process. The CHIPPY developer said that construction contractors would only be in the Mid-Hudson segment of the river in Ulster County for 1 to 2 months, and then we'd never see them again, adding that the electric cable would be completely invisible in Ulster County. When asked how many jobs the project would create, which is the very foundation of any pilot request, the developer couldn't commit to a number. So concerns about the pilot have been raised by the Hudson Seven, which is a coalition of seven municipalities that draw drinking water from the Hudson River at Poughkeepsie, Hyde Park, Rhinebeck, and in Ulster County, Esopus and Lloyd. There are 5 public water supplies, serve 106,000 residents, 3 hospitals, 3 colleges, and major regional employers, providing safe water for human consumption, firefighting, industry, and more. So what I'd like to do tonight, along with our message from Riverkeeper, is to share, and I'll do that in the chat. The Hudson 7 submitted a letter last December, I believe. Yeah, December the 3rd, to the Ulster County IDA. And so I wanted to share that to read. And to also note that for most of the communities in the Hudson 7, the Hudson River is their primary drinking water source. Well, for all of them, it's their primary drinking water source. And at least on the Dutchess County side, it's their only drinking water source. So tonight, in relation to Ulster County, and it's late, so thank you. I'm glad to be here tonight with Shannon Harris. Shannon Harris is a leader in the town of Esopus, and along with the town of Lloyd, the two municipalities are located in Ulster County. And Shannon is a founding member of the Hudson 7, and she's here with me tonight to provide some context for the Hudson 7's letter. So Shannon, are you still here, I hope?
I am. Thank you for the introduction, Rebecca. First, I want to thank the county for supporting the Hudson 7's mission in the form of partial funding for a coordinator that has been needed. And I just want to take a quick moment, because I know it is late and we all want to get home, or we're home, but we want to get on to better things. I want to speak to the extraordinary effort that the Hudson 7 municipalities have been taking to prepare for the deep water trenching that is on the horizon to occur in just a few short years. The Hudson 7 has been working diligently over the past year to bring the transmission developers to the table to just talk to us about what can be expected to take place and the potential impacts when the attempt to make an 18.5-mile run of deep jet plow trenching within a couple hundred feet of our drinking water intake valves. And for Esopus, it's within 500 feet of our drinking water intake valve, which is the source water, the fresh drinking water for thousands of Esopus residents. This activity is on such a massive scale. It's never been done before, not in our lifetimes, and I don't think in the history of the Hudson River in this way. We know that this Canadian corporation admitted to us that they never even took into consideration the impact of the project on our drinking water supplies. So, and just so that you know, that, and you probably, a lot of you know that this mid-Hudson area of the Hudson River is the source, it's the reservoir, it's the source water estuary for 106,000 people and businesses in the area. So we have been for a year now trying to work with them and understanding what they're going to do, how it's going to impact, and preparing our municipalities. These folks aren't even equipped with the right insurance to handle if one of our water supplies gets knocked out by their jet plow or taken offline by the extreme turbidity or dredging up of contaminants or damage that it could occur. So our municipal workers are aware of this, and we've brought them in for several meetings. Our water treatment operators will be on standby for months before and even years. They're working now just to prepare the testing that we insisted upon, our lawyers, and through meetings, that they did not want to do any pre-testing of the dredging. So the bottom line is that there's a lot of unknowns here. We have dragged them to the table at every step of the way. They have reluctantly agreed to do the testing, And to ask the county, the residents, and the users of the water, and to have some kind of tax break is really extraordinary. And I'm asking for your committee to consider to take a stand on this issue by saying no to the prospects of awarding a pilot in lieu of the only possible positive aspect of this project is the tax revenue that it will bring to the residents of Ulster County. There is just no nexus between the purpose of reducing this Canadian corporation's tax obligation through a pilot, which is for the long-term sustainable economic benefit and local job creation, and this short-term, extraordinarily risky, environmentally damaging, and potentially hazardous dredging project that is for the benefit of New York City. So that is what we're asking. I'm speaking on behalf of the Hudson Seven and imploring you to consider our point of view. There are multiple other points of views: the environment, recreational aspects of the Hudson, people's livelihoods that are at risk. But the drinking water is our mission here tonight. So thank you.
All right. This was really meant as new business. We don't have any resolution memorializing. We don't have a letter. But it was background information that was requested. It does affect Ulster County municipalities. And I just want to point out that the legislature has no direct jurisdiction over a decision that the IDA makes. We do actually approve their appointments, if I'm not mistaken. But there could be a sense of, yes, please, Chairman Bynum-Kaffner, Chairwoman Bynum-Kaffner.
I just wanted to make a few comments about this matter because I thought a lot about it. Most people probably do not know that my profession is a hydrogeologist. And I've worked on all kinds of water situations, specifically for the town of Lloyd and various other places in the area. I think this is the worst concept you could ever have because of the contamination in that water. You know, we don't know where the PCBs are that were never cleaned up, that leaked out of General Electric stuff all north of Albany. As far as I'm concerned, the best place for it would be on land, either on a right-of-way like the Taconic or the Thruway, but definitely not in the water. I mean, this is the livelihood of these towns, and to risk the contamination is absolutely horrible. Let me remind you how we managed to keep out fracking in this state. I remember going to all kinds of towns and town boards and people and talking about fracking, how bad it is, because the fluids they pump into the ground, it's like getting rid of hazardous waste. And here we are, a very similar situation. We've got to get people energized to speak up. The more people who know about this, the more we can stop it. But that's what it's really going to take. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Catherine. If I may just say that the reason why we're here tonight, too, is because we do understand that the legislature doesn't have direct purview over the IDA. Hudson Seven's letter was sent to the Ulster County IDA and also the Department of the Environment, but we thought it was really important that the Ulster County legislature was made aware, not only of this project, but of the amount of property tax or pilot subsidies that they were looking for from the county, and not just this county, but 13 others. And so here we are in Ulster County, and the Hudson Seven's doing a great job in raising awareness of this issue. And so that's why we're here tonight. Thanks, Catherine.
Okay, I think I could ask about questions, and I see there are two hands. But as you ask your questions, I'm going to want to know if anyone wants to follow up to work on this, because there's nothing for us, no action for us to take tonight unless somebody proposes an action. All right. I saw two hands. Where'd they go?
Well, real quick, we'll be doing interviews for the IDA, and we can certainly ask them about this. And I think we've done a terrible job interviewing for the IDA term after term after term. And I think we need to start asking these individuals that are looking to be on the IDA about specific pilots of the past, pilots coming down, you know, that are going to be asked for soon, and having these individuals explain to us that they understand the law, that they have an idea of what they're doing, instead of, you know, I think outside influence basically telling them how to vote. And in the next couple of weeks, and I'll definitely ask and get some responses from some of these prospective IDA members before I ever agree to vote for them.
Thanks, Joe. One thing I will say is we did watch the meeting where TDI was present and transcribed it, and the Ulster County IDA was very skeptical. So that is good. They there are other counties north of us that were convinced that this was free money without really, examining what the request was and what the project was, and understanding what sort of concerns there might be with the police or the fire, or how it impacts school districts and school budgets. So I was happy to see that in this case, the Ulster County IDA members were skeptical. So that was positive in this case.
They always are.
Any other comments? Yes, Legislator Rana, please.
I'll yield to Legislator Stewart first, please.
Oh, I was just going to ask a question. I mean, what would be an appropriate next step for us to take in opposing this? Or a suggested? I mean, I'm just since I'm new at this as well, I just don't even know, like, you know.
I don't know if we have jurisdiction to act on it in any way. We could ask legal counsel about that, but a memorializing resolution to bring some more attention to the fact that if the majority of the legislature was against this, sometimes holds some weight, especially with local environmental concerns. It definitely gets more people aware in the community that don't even know that this is coming down the line. Nothing moves the wheels of justice like public outcry, and sometimes a memorializing resolution can do that. I don't think we have jurisdiction to actually pass some kind of law that disallows this kind of technology or construction, but a memorializing resolution is probably something.
Thank you for that explanation.
Phil, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Green.
Oh, you muted yourself again, Phil.
Thank you, Santillo. thank you, Chair Green. I would like to be the one to follow up, and as you had asked, Chair Green, and I'd just like to make a few comments. First of all, thank you to the members of Riverkeeper Hudson 7 for coming and speaking with us tonight. And this is an issue that if you weren't here, I would have been bringing up anyhow. I've been following this for a decade, having come from the Capital District before here, where there are a group of folks who've been concerned about this for that period of time. It seems like we have a state shoving this project down our throat, or at least not giving us any power to say no, as Legislator Maloney said, overall. But and it does hearten me that our IDA has called it into question. But look at what we're looking at here. We're looking at a massive hydroelectric dam hundreds of miles north here in a different country. That's not renewable. I'm sorry. That's an old way of thinking about generating power, and that's not what we need to be accepting here in Ulster County, and certainly not giving them any money. Now, in a prior career, I also worked in physics and environmental physics, so I'd happy to contribute that expertise into our understanding of the situation that we're facing. And to Chair Beinkaffner's point, I want to amplify and go beyond that. Like, we banned fracking in New York, but look what we didn't ban. We didn't ban the piping in of fracking gas from other states and provinces, and we didn't ban the construction and use of fracking power plants in our state. So, you know, the consistency with our state's Climate Leadership Community Protection Act and the new state constitutional amendment providing every person a right to clean air, water, and a healthful environment is calling, bringing contradictions to the surface as far as I'm concerned. So I could go on a lot more about this, but I'll just leave it there. And I'm really looking forward to following up on this issue. Thank you.
Okay. Is that a hand, Legislator Stewart?
No, that was a thumbs up. So,
okay. Sorry. All right. So thank you very much. And is there any other new business?
Thanks for having us, Manna, and thank you for hosting us. And certainly Riverkeeper, and I think I can speak for the Hudson Seven, right, Shannon, to say that we're happy to help the legislature in any way that they need with materials and what have you to be successful here. So thank you, and thank you, Phil. Appreciate that.
And thank you, ladies. It's always nice to see you both. So
great to see you too.
Thank you for your support, everyone.
I see Emily Hauser is still here. Emily, is there any update from the, I think I inadvertently skipped over that, from Environmental Management Council?
Hello, my name, yes, I'm Emily Hauser, and I'm here as vice chair representing the EMC. And as Manna stated at the beginning of this meeting, the EMC is part of your mission, and we were not on the agenda. So I wasn't even prepared to report on anything. I believe that you get our minutes, and you can read our minutes. And I want to also note, say that Eric Stewart used to be on the EMC. And I would say two things. One, for those of you that want to know a little bit more about solid waste, in particular plastics, Judith Enck is going to be at the EMC meeting as the speaker. So those meetings are Zoom meetings, and the Department of the Environment helps us with the Zoom. So I'm not exactly sure who gets notified of the Zooms. But Judith Inks is, you know, a former EPA administrator, and she now is really working on Beyond Plastics. So, and the EMC always has a speaker at the beginning of our meetings, and Judith has offered to speak. So you might want to listen to that. And
she's a frequent guest on NPR too. So
she's a guest on NPR, but not necessarily about plastics. And she is also working very diligently with all the other environmental groups on a bill for the EPR, extended producer responsibility, which can be one important solution for reducing waste, packaging, and other waste. And so we meet at 6:30 on the last the last Wednesday of the month, not the fourth, the last. So it can be the fourth, it can be the fifth. So the next one is the 23rd. And I would just say, I don't have a report, but I will say that the people that are on the MC who are generally also on their Conservation Advisory Council, they are doing amazing work. Every one of them, they are working on their natural resources inventories, their open space plans, they're looking at community preservation acts. They are doing climate work, putting in, you know, helping their towns to get in vehicle charging stations. And so individually and in all these towns, they're doing amazing work. We are very infrequently asked by the legislator to do any research or anything, but we sometimes do send resolutions to the legislature. For instance, you know, we could do something like the pilot one for the Hudson, for the Chippy. Anyway, so thank you for the time.
Absolutely. And I want to say that Emily Hauser and I both worked at the UCRRA. I was there for a decade and Emily pretty close to that. We are now part of that zero waste implementation planning group. And Emily also chairs materials management for the Mid-Hudson Regional Sustainability Coalition, where a lot of this information is exchanged with nonprofits, municipalities, businesses, you know, many of the sectors, and all of the geography of the Mid-Hudson region is represented on that coalition.
I would also say that just at the very beginning of this meeting, of the people that were on, that were you know, Laura, Manna, and I have all worked for UCRA, plus the board members, and there is, and along with Charlie Landy and everyone else that works at UCRA, there is a huge amount of institutional memory, a huge amount.
I don't think you'd find another county in New York State that has so many people in government and government related committees that sort of cut their teeth in their local research recovery agency. And if we can all work together, I really do believe we can become a model for the rest of the region. And speaking of which, we have one other resolution to consider, and it has a TBA. It has two TBAs, and it's a resolution regarding the Ulster County. It's resolution number 10, which I have misplaced, but it's regarding the appointments to the board of the agency. I think Fawn kindly tried to schedule an opportunity to interview for the past few years. Even though this is a chair's appointment, and then it has to be voted on by the legislature, the interview process has been held by Energy and Environment, and I think we've tried to be very fair and, you know, not and open to what is going to be best for the agency and best for Ulster County. The reason I held this off is if people had things they wanted to discuss that required us going into executive session, I didn't want to hold other people up. On the other hand, if people are you know, we don't need to postpone this resolution. We can just hold it until after we've had a chance to interview candidates. So I want to just open that up for discussion, but know that if you're going to be speak, please do not speak. I think you all have the resumes, but please do not speak about a specific person. We need to go into executive session. Essentially, it's a personnel issue.
Madam Chair, I don't think you have the resumes right now.
Oh.
But I can tell you, as you're aware, the chair put out a press release. The deadline to, for people to apply to that is on the 4th. Right now, we have four applicants I'm aware of. Lisa Mitten, whose seat is coming up, asked not to be reappointed. She's going to wants to focus on mental health programs and things and put her energies there. But we have right now we have four applicants. On Monday at afternoon, I can send you the resumes, the information we have on whoever has applied by then. And we had tentatively tried to set up interviews, which would be a special meeting of this committee on the 9th at, we were trying to start it in the afternoon. If we only have four applicants, we would probably start around 3:30. If we get more, we'll push it up to start a little earlier, but we'd set up 20-minute interviews and then the committee could, which were done in executive session, and then the committee could make your have a discussion, make your recommendations, and go forward. I just wanted you all, if we're going to try to get this done before the 15th, so you can add names to this resolution, we don't have a lot of time to hold meetings to do these interviews. So I just wanted to see if your committee would be available on Wednesday the 9th, starting around 3 or 3:30.
I'd be available. I would say that I'm not big on executive session, but I think the few people that would be booted off would probably be okay with it at this point. I will give Nick some credit. He is stoic and is not – everyone else is showing real signs of fading here, but I feel even better about our appointment. He's showing some real toughness there. This is getting late. Phil just asked that it's – the 4th is that tomorrow? We had to kind of pick a date to kind of get these names in there because we're getting up against it. But if a name came in at the last minute and it was after whatever our deadline was, we could still accept that person and interview them. So it's absolutely not hard and fast.
But the deadline is the 7th. I'm sorry if I said the 4th. The deadline is the 7th at noon is what was in the press release for RRA seats. I know Gina is a teacher, so 3:30 may be tough for her.
Yes. You know,
How long are we giving ourselves per interview?
20 minutes.
Well, usually it's 15 and then we sort of debrief a little bit for 5 and then we do another interview. And then we don't have time for a lot of discussion, but at the end, then we take, you know, about another 20 minutes to sort it out and try to see if there's consensus.
If we narrowed it down, what's that?
I'm sorry.
No.
What time would you start?
Oh, we were talking about 3:30. If we only have four candidates, and if you would be available like later, maybe we have to break the interviews up over a couple of days. We could do some on the 10th also.
I could see if I could leave a little early so I could be there at, you know, like 3:15.
I would be available.
I'll make anything work.
And what day of the week is that? Just
Wednesday the 9th.
Okay.
So we will notice a special meeting for Wednesday the 9th. And we'll see if we can start it around 3:15, 3:30, and see if we can get the interviews in.
And Fawn, I don't need to do anything formal, I don't need to ask the committee to just hold it. We can just hold it.
You can take no action tonight, and we will make sure that's an agenda item on the 9th, so you can vote on it that night.
Great. And I want to thank, not only thank Nick, but also Deputy Ryder for hanging in there. Really appreciate it. And I think, you know, one of the last things I'd like to say, and I'll be sure that everyone else has had a chance, I really do believe that because of the extent and the rapidity of the global climate crisis, that we really have to find ways of working together. And one of the examples that I thought was really superb was the little subcommittees to work on the hour projects, where you had legislators and staff working together. I went to one or two meetings, and it was so productive because we were very solution oriented. And I think that sort of historically, even though it is absolutely the operations is absolutely the job of the executive branch, but I think sometimes when things were decided there and brought to the legislature, and we ask questions, it could seem offensive or critical. But if there's an opportunity on special projects like ARPA to have people working together, and as a matter of fact, it was from the legislature, they were bipartisan, one from each caucus, and then the appropriate staff. I just think that's a really good way to get things done. And I also think that if we can get the UCRRA, and we already have the executive branch and the legislature working together on the big picture for solid waste that'll drill down into, you know, very concrete recommendations, timelines, funding sources, et cetera. You know, I think we can become a model to make a difference. And we've done that in many ways over the years. And I do appreciate the report from the RRA on all they're doing. And Catherine just, you know, help remind them to get it in writing so we can include it in our minutes. And Gina, you have not taken up a lot of airtime. And I always, when I end a meeting, I try to think who hasn't spoken up. And sometimes the people who haven't spoken up have the best things to say, but have just not, you know, stepped forward. So I just want to invite you to give some closing thoughts.
Well, I've listened to those that have served before me, and they said to initially just learn and listen and take it in. So that's what I've been doing. So I have a lot to learn. I've taken a lot of notes. I'm looking forward to working with all of you and moving forward.
Great. Anything else that I've either overlooked or any other final comments? And by the way, it took me 3 years of being on the legislature to even feel like I belonged here, let alone knew what was going on. So, you know, it really is an adjustment. And I know you're all going through that because this is a committee of all new people. So, and Laura and I are here to help. And Joe's been around this block. He's returning. All right. I see a hand raised. Legislator Erner, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Pardon me, I just saw at the very end of our agenda we had some old business and stuff. Does that just get pushed to the next meeting then?
I don't think there is any, but I should ask.
She talked about those draft resolutions. We're just gonna, those have been replaced by that climate checklist. And she didn't really get a chance to give us a climate smart update that we normally do, but.
What I would rather do, and I absolutely will bring back information from the Climate Smart Committee, which I also chair, and that it's not a standing committee, but it is a committee created by law. In fact, Legislator Petit wrote that law, and it's a way there are five committee members, and we need a legislator from Public Works and Capital Projects, because I don't serve on that committee anymore. So I'm taking the seat of EES. The purpose is to advise the county directly on actions they can take that are climate solutions or that are mitigating emissions, or for example, with regenerative agriculture, helping to draw down and sequester emissions, et cetera. And we do keep track of that. And a lot of times those reports are coming through Public Works and Capital Projects. But it's also a networking opportunity for the Climate Smart Committee representatives from all of the municipalities in the county. They haven't all taken the pledge, but by far most of them have, and pretty regularly send representatives and share what they're doing, which will then give other municipalities an opportunity to say, hey, that's a great idea, let's us do it. And I'll try to bring some actual highlights. But what I do want to share is that myself and Penny Coleman from Town of Rosendale have been working with Scenic Hudson on a solar mapping project that empowers municipalities to look at their lands and see what are good opportunities for solar or other renewables or storage. And then what are the constraints to doing so? And I know that Marbletown sent Alan Newman, and City of Kingston has a representative. And there were 12 municipalities, and several of us are actually taking the next step of writing a report, some of which will be speculative until we meet with Central Hudson. But I think we have 6 recommendations, including the town landfill. So it changes the municipality from a passive responder to a developer's ideas. Not that that's bad, but it gives them a tool to evaluate whether or not this is going to be a good site, rather than just sort of trying to figure it out or often referring it to their engineer. But they become proactive in developing their own sites and encouraging the businesses. So for example, in Rosendale, we presented to the Environmental Commission, and now we're gonna be presenting to economic development, because it definitely is economic development, and the town board and planning board, et cetera. And that training session is an hour and a half to 2 hours, and there are 5 sessions. And we're doing it again in the spring. So if any of your municipalities would like to participate, We started out with 15 municipalities, 12 of them completed, and the evaluations were really excellent. They were deeply enrolled, and it's really made a difference so that the municipalities can take a leading role in achieving the goals of the State Climate Act. So I just want to put that out there and ask you each to think about.
Mana Jo, I just have to give you a plug, though. All of the work, that's just one small piece that they're working on in the Climate Smart that Mana's working on. That Climate Smart committee got so big, and so many municipalities were trying to do that Climate Smart pledge, that Nick and Europa and Amanda, the folks at our Department of Environment, have formed a municipal Climate Smart task force that helps them with the nuts and bolts of doing that climate pledge. And Mark, the executive office, should be very proud. Ulster County was, I don't know if you're aware, was in National Geographic for, I think, the first county ever to be recognized for those climate actions. And so they're trying to green the Ulster County Fair. They've got a group working on, you know, municipal lighting and lots of different avenues. So if any of your municipalities, I went to a meeting in the town of Lloyd, and you know, they were talking about municipal lighting, and we got them involved with Europa, and you know, it's, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and Nick is a great resource, and it all grew out of this Climate Smart committee. So
which grew out of Legislator Petit's
warming committee, and
Global Warming Committee, and then it became
the Climate Smart.
And I want to say that the way we were able to take our recycling rate, when Laura and Emily and I worked for the RRA, from a documented 4% to a documented 40%, but that also included composting and some other forms of waste diversion, was the same structure of bringing the municipal recycling coordinators together on a monthly basis, sharing information. If one person went to a conference, then they could bring that information back, and all 20 of us didn't need to go. And could benefit. So thank you for the commendation, but it, you know, the working together group is really the best way to get things done. And I have a hard time sleeping these days when I think about how rapidly the poles are melting and how much we need to do. But thank goodness New York has a very strong climate law that has been upheld. So far, the challenges to it have been upheld, and in many ways, the governor is supporting it with her budget. And in the way she's not, she'll hear about it. Anyway, did I hear a motion?
Yes, I think we just became a full-time legislature like 5 minutes ago. I'll make a motion to close.
I second.
Thank you. Fawn, did you get who spoke in both cases? Okay, super. Well, all in favor?
Aye.
And nobody's opposed to adjourning. And thank you all. Have a good evening, and I look forward to working with each of you.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
You all.